All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us on our World Peace Diet Circle call for October 2019. This is Thursday, October 17th. And it's just so fantastic that we are able to be together on this call this evening. So thank you, everyone, for your many efforts on behalf of peace and harmony and awakening and healing on our planet. And we're going to be talking, hopefully, if everything works, to Dr. Silas Rao a little bit later on, probably in, I'm hoping, in around 10 or 15 minutes, if it all goes well. So at this point, I'm just going to take a moment and go over a little bit briefly the immediate news, and then we'll have our meditation that we usually have at the beginning. So, and welcome any newcomers who perhaps haven't been here before. So, yeah, thanks everyone again. And the news for us is we just returned from a pretty long lecture tour to. Let's see, we went 12, basically Oregon and Washington, and we were able to do, I think it was about 13 events in about 9 days, and it went really well. We lived in our little camper van, which we just recently finished converting, more or less. It was a big job. It's one of those funny things where it seems like for quite a few months, every day we worked on it. We finished it yesterday, and then, like, now what do we do? It's kind of a funny feeling. But we'd work on it a few hours every day just to make it. It was a lot of work to convert this little van from just a metal shell to all this insulation and fabric and wood and cabinets and sink and water tanks and bedding and supplies and lighting and electrical systems and all these different things. So, that's pretty much finished. We're waiting for this kind of special little battery we want to have, which should be ready pretty soon. But all in all, it was great. We enjoyed staying in it. It's tiny. It's the size of a compact car. And we lived in it for 10 days, and we were really quite comfortable, I have to say. And we met some fantastic people in every city along the way. We started in Weaverville, which is just outside Redding, in Northern California, and then we went up to Ashland, Oregon, and then to Eureka, where we had a really terrific event. They had spent a lot of energy promoting that, so there was a lot of people. It was a full house. And then we went up to Portland, which was the Portland Veg Fest, and did quite a few lectures there. And then Vancouver, Washington, just over the border in Washington, and then back south to some other cities in Oregon. I think it was maybe it was Medford. And we also gave a lecture in Mount Shasta at the hospital. It was great. And one of the things that the highlight was the hospital serving organic vegan refreshments. And we need to have that more, I think, in hospitals. And then finally in Redding, and then in Chico. And then tomorrow, Madeline and I are heading to Forest Knolls, which is just north of San Francisco, for our World Peace Diet retreat and facilitator training program. We have about 15 people signed up for that, and it looks like it's going to be a wonderful group, great, beautiful place. I haven't been there, but it just looks great. We've been many times to that area, to West Marin. It's very peaceful, and this time of year especially, it's wonderful weather, so it'll be a chance to meditate and also share the ideas and have a training with World Peace Diet teachings, and we'll be welcoming 15 new facilitators into our family of, I guess, probably, I'm not sure, maybe several hundred at least, I guess, at this point. So anyway, much love to all of you. Thanks again for joining us. And I'm looking to see quickly here if Silas maybe is here. I'm trying to tell. I guess maybe not yet. So let's go ahead and just take a minute for our meditation time to ground the intention that we all have for the call. So wherever you happen to be, if it works for you to turn your attention within for just a minute and just breathing and giving thanks for the work that we have cut out for us here for this lifetime to help liberate animals and human beings, all animals, and especially human animals from our programming, and the non-human animals from the domination and exploitation at the hands of human beings, to help create the foundation of a world where freedom and peace and justice, sustainability are possible. We give thanks for each other, for all the efforts that everyone is making to help share the love and caring and joy and health that are contained in the message of animal liberation, coming into harmony with our true nature and with our rightful place on this beautiful earth, that we may awaken out of this daze, this sort of cultural trance that seems to have taken a hold of most of us through the violence of being compelled from infancy to eat animal foods and animal secretions, and how that just shuts down our natural awareness, and that we are now in the process of not only awakening ourselves and healing, but also doing the best we can to be a voice for a way of living that's based on the truth of the interconnectedness of all life. We give thanks for all the efforts of everyone who's part of this movement, and those who are not part of this movement but are also working in the same direction to help with peace and liberation, justice, and sustainability, that we may all realize the critical role that awakening from animal agriculture plays in solving the problems that we're facing today, because animal agriculture at its core aligns us to the beauty of this earth and of the animals and of ourselves. So we are awakening out of that, and that's something to be grateful for. So we give thanks knowing that all of the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our time together on this call and from our intention to be each one of us a beacon of light and healing in the world, and together to reinforce and inspire and inform each other so that we can create a field of compassion and kindness and respect for all life that goes beyond all borders, not only the political borders, but also the economic borders and the species borders and the cultural borders, to include all beings in the sphere of our kindness and concern. We give thanks knowing that all of our efforts bear fruit in their due time, and that we're part of an awakening of consciousness among human beings on this earth, that our time here in this lifetime is being a contribution to the solution of the problems here, and that each one of us is guided by our intuition to find and to connect with the unique piece of the puzzle that we have to contribute. Not that anyone is any better than anyone else. We all have a piece. And each one of us, even if it's a little piece, it's absolutely important. If you've ever made a jigsaw puzzle, you know. You need every piece. So thank you all for being the piece. As Mahatma Gandhi said, the P-I-E and the P-E-A. And being the piece that we long to see in the world, in our relationships with each other and with animals. And we go forth into our call now, just remembering that there's one life that lives through all of us, and it's an eternal life, far beyond the concepts of our categorizing minds, that we can awaken to the majesty of being as we let go of the old delusions that permeate our society and the narratives of separateness that drive most of us in our institutions. So we're creating institutions and sacred and safe spaces for a new way of living. Through the infinite spirit within, we give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. All right, so great. So here we are. And I also was actually thinking it would be nice to see if Madeline can say a few words. She's been very busy the last few days getting ready to prepare all the meals we're going to be eating over this weekend. So Madeline, can you press star 6? We're going to try this out. We have a new system here, so we're still kind of getting used to it. So let's see here. Here we go. Okay, I see Madeline. Uh-huh. So now what do I do? So now I just unmute your phone.
I'm here.
Good. Now, hear your wonderful voice.
Yes.
So, Madeline, tell me, what would you like to share with everybody as we go into our retreat tomorrow for the weekend? It'd be just nice to, whatever you'd like to share, it'd be great to hear.
Yeah. First of all, hi to everybody on the call. It's nice that you're here. Every single one is a joy being here. And yeah, like Will said, I was very busy, I guess, for the last few days and even maybe longer as I prepared for the menu plan of the retreat. It's all the meals. And I'm just not forgetting anything and then going shopping and get the rest of it. And we have quite a bit out of the garden, like pumpkins or kabocha squash and lots of herbs. Practically all the herbs will be from the garden. And we bring a few persimmons, the pioneer ripe persimmons. Not many, but they're coming along, so it will be nice, and it will be a big experience because I've never seen the kitchen, and I don't have my beloved pots, which are these surgical steel pots and pans I'm used to cook in, so we'll see how it will work. So I can't bring mine because it's only for 4 people maybe. So, but it will be great. And otherwise, shall I say anything more? Like, and then I'm also doing the yoga in the morning at 7:30. We start the program with yoga. I'm doing this every morning on my own at home here in the house, on the deck or inside, depending. Now it's getting dark in the morning. So there will be the yoga, and then I dive right into breakfast making, and we'll have the meditation, which will be great, and then the whole program. I will also be talking about the practical aspect of veganism and the chemicals which are lurking on us, and we have to be really more than ever careful that we don't ingest these chemicals, and especially also not be part of the consumerism of these chemicals for protecting the butterflies and all the insects and our precious water and oceans, rivers, and lakes. And so I will be talking about this at one point, and we'll do also some experiencing of nature around there, and the program is really absolutely great. So I'm happy that we have all the people coming. Yeah, so what else?
Well, it's so nice to hear that you have everything so well in your hands, and I think we're all going to be just smacking our lips over the delicious food. Although, I know part of it is to make food that is not only delicious, but the main thing is that it's a meditation retreat. So we want to have very clean food that keeps us balanced, and that's the kind of food you always make. I would, would love. You know, the old saying was in the Zen monasteries, only the most advanced students were allowed to cook. So I'm very confident that you're the right one to be preparing the food, because it's really the vibration in the food, as well as the biochemistry of the food, but also the chi energy or the prana, I think, is really an aspect as well. So by putting your love into the food, we're all going to be blessed. And we're really grateful. I'm sure everybody's just looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you for that, Will. And you're right. It will be simple food, so our digestion goes easily. I won't make gourmet foods, but nice tasting kind of temple food. And so, yeah, it will be for the benefit of all.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. Well, thanks, Madeline, for joining us on the call and also sharing about your pants and all the different issues. You know, we're so concerned now about GMOs. This has become this new thing in the last few months when we've really researched. So everything is very, very, not only organic, but a lot of it's from our own garden, even. I know you've been out busy. What have you been harvesting out there anyway? You want to just tell people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like the persimmon stuff and the apples. We got them all in already. And there are different things. And I can't really remember sometimes.
No, for the retreat.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, we will have kabocha, pumpkin, and a few persimmons, the ones which ripen by the time, and lots of herbs. For every dish, we will have particular herbs.
Awesome.
That's about it. Yeah.
Great. Okay, well, thanks, sweetheart. I'm going to go ahead and mute your phone. So you can continue on. And actually, I just sent a message to Dr. Silas Rao, and for some reason I don't see him on our list here. As I say, we have a new system now. But hopefully he will be joining us. And I talked to him this morning, and he said he would. So, but I know sometimes life gets ahead of us if we're really busy, or if we're not. So we'll go ahead, and Silas, hopefully will be calling in here at some point, and I'll be able to see that he is. So, in the meantime, there's been a number of several questions have been asked of me to the people wanted me to discuss. And this is a good opportunity. And don't forget also, any of you who are on the call, if you'd like to say something, make a comment, ask a question, this is your time. Star 6 will, I believe, make it visible here under the Q&A that you'd like to ask a question. So just press star 6 if you have anything you'd like to say. So one of the questions people have been asking me about, there's several of them. One of them, of course, is about the politics of the Democratic Party. And apparently, some people think that we have, for the first time, maybe a vegan running, several vegans running, or at least Cory Booker, and what I think about that. And, I don't want to actually spend a lot of time on that because I don't personally have much faith in the two-party system anymore. And but Tulsi Gabbard is actually a vegan too. She recently said she's been vegan for a number of years, and she hasn't been making such a thing about it like Cory Booker, which I'm glad he is. But it's great that it's just getting out there. And we have a good friend who's also a World Peace Diet facilitator, Catherine Perry, who's actually helped organize our lecture recently in South Bend, Indiana. And she's with the Humane Party, and there's a number of people with the Humane Party that I think are working to try to help expand our electoral system beyond this two-party kind of deadlock. And so that's who I voted for last time was for Clifton Roberts, because I think there's so much corruption in both the Democratic and Republican parties. It's hard for me to advocate for anybody at this point. Marianne Williamson has been also, you know, kind of interesting, although I remember so many stories of her and her antipathy, you know, toward veganism, that it's a little bit hard for me to. Hopefully, she's changed. But I have a friend who was really trying to get her at least to say a little bit about veganism, or at least let him hand out some vegan information when she was a minister of the big Unity Church in Detroit. And she actually had him arrested for sharing the vegan message. So ever since then, I've just been a little bit suspicious of her when it comes to entertaining other ideas. But I think we do have this fantastic momentum. It is building. I mean, the fact that we have Dennis Kucinich, and we have other people who are presidential contenders who are bringing up the mistreatment of animals for food in various ways, I think that's a great thing. And then, so that's one thing that people are asking me about. Another thing people have been asking me about is a little bit actually about the Humane Party in general, actually. And I do want to say, I think maybe we'll have an opportunity to hear more about this and talk more about this when we get closer to the election. But I think there is a movement in other countries. We've seen it happening with this proportional representation where in Europe especially, they really get some pretty good laws passed because of just one or two animal party, you know, people are in politics. And so if we can get something like that moving in our country here in the United States, I think that would be great. We have had just this past month some wonderful success in California, I think, with the passage of fur being phased out. That's really something to celebrate. There's no longer, in the year 2023, fur will no longer be able to be sold in California, and that includes fur trim, which is a big thing because fur trim is on so many things. So that's, and if companies can't do it in California, that's going to force them to really change their product lines, I think, and will be a strong economic disincentive to imprison and kill these beautiful fur-bearing animals for their fur. And hopefully other states will also begin to follow suit. So that's really great. And also no trapping, no more, that's not allowed either, and which is one of the most hideous things ever, you know, is trapping of animals. So there's been some good things, some not so good things, but there's a few good things happening on the political scene the last month. And we also have been asked about the climate change whole thing, and that's what I was hoping to talk to Silas Rao about. But I can say that for myself, I was on the summit that he had. I don't know if you folks had a chance to listen. It's still up. You can still get it to it, I believe, at climatehealers.org, the website, the recordings of all of the, and probably on their Facebook page, recordings of all of the interviews. There were 10 interviews by leading people in different aspects of the vegan movement. And the basic idea according to the world, to I guess it was some scientists working for World Wildlife Fund and other scientists, that in sort of looking at the rates of extinction and how they're accelerating, that if we project the current rate of extinction of species just out into the future, that in a really quite shockingly brief span of time, we could see the basic mass extinction of most of the species on planet Earth, at least of the mammals, the larger, you know, animals, by the year 2026, because it's accelerating. Unfortunately, in Africa, especially in the rainforests, also, and in the oceans, these are where species really exist a lot. I mean, not only the marine mammals, but also fish species, bird species, and as well as amphibians, reptiles, and mammals, are all under an enormous assault right now, and it's due primarily to animal agriculture and the destruction of habitat and the use of so many pesticide, herbicide, fungicide, and pesticide residues. And this devastation to ecosystems is also, of course, one of the driving forces behind apparently the apparent destabilization of the climate as well, you know, burning forests and this massive amount of bovine grazing, and all the methane from all that. So anyway, this is a very unnatural, kind of bizarre situation where animals and human beings have pretty much taken over the planet, and free-living animals are now, instead of being 98% or 99%, actually just 10,000 years ago were 99% of all the biomass on the Earth, are now less than 2%. So that we've taken the Earth away, and it seems to be increasing as more people eat animal foods and meat. And so we are making progress as more people going vegan, and the amount of meat in the United States and other developed countries is reducing now, which is great. But in other countries like India, China, and other less industrialized countries, it's increasing. And so there's a huge problem with extinction of species. So Sailesh Rao's group is called Climate Healers, and in this Vegan World 2026 is basically a campaign of education to try to help us move as quickly as we can by the year 2026 to a vegan world. And I love the idea of, you know, really tackling this as best we can, and talking about the ways that we can do that. And he had people on who are experts in various aspects, like in the Constitution, you know, lawyers who are talking about how we need to have a new legal frameworks, and then also economists and new economic frameworks and new currency, you know, blockchain currencies apparently give a lot more possibilities, sort of getting out from under the thumb of the Federal Reserve and the central banks that control the creation of money, which goes pretty much a massive flood of money that goes into systems and projects that are exploiting ecosystems and animals and people in order to concentrate the wealth in the hands of these few people, the bankers and the wealthy elite. So the idea is that we need to, you know, change that. Of course, the health foods, the health care system also needs to be overhauled. He interviewed Dr. Michael Clapper, who talked about the challenges in doing that. And I can paraphrase a few of those things, which I think would be interesting to talk to me, because we need to also have a spiritual foundation for all of this. And so I talked for probably, an hour and a half, speaking and then answering questions, which was wonderful. It was really a great, good questions that were asked. And so I think, you know, it's a very holistic view that is helpful. We don't know how it's all going to play out. From my point of view, I think the main thing really is to focus on the vegan project, that if we can help people realize that animal agriculture is the driving force behind this whole mandala of devastating effects on our environment and on our society and on our physical health, psychological health, spiritual health, then we'll be able to create the institutions that are required. But without the vegan piece pretty much in place, nothing else is going to get anywhere, really. We've got to get that going. So I think it's great to support these efforts, and he is going to be having, not this weekend, but the following weekend, a gathering in Mesa, Arizona, in Phoenix area, of people, and it's a conference focused on sort of a grassroots, like putting together actual things people can do and people taking on projects, what they can do for the coming year to help implement the various ideas that people come up with to help spread the vegan message. So that's the idea. And if he doesn't join us this evening for some reason, then we can certainly talk about other things, and maybe next month we can have him back. So since I don't see him on here, but anyways, I do want to mention this thing that Michael Clapper emphasizes, which I think is important. And again, it just shows part of the dilemma, really, that we face in a society that's organized at its living core around disease and war. Unfortunately, that's really what it is. I mean, disease and war are the two big money makers, and the pharmaceutical industry especially has taken such control over the media. I mean, by far, the pharmaceutical industry pumps more money in advertising into radio, television, and the print media. And as I've said before, I think they do that, number one, to control the media. Number two, to the message, I mean, for people. So people ask their doctors for drugs, which maybe they never would think of doing. But mainly, I think, you know, I learned this since I was raised in a newspaper family, that whoever is advertising, they control the content. And my father didn't want to run any content that would make the advertisers unhappy. And the biggest advertisers, of course, you really want to keep them happy. And Big Pharma is the biggest advertiser of all. And so the result is that we have just like a 24/7 deluge of propaganda from Big Pharma in the mainstream media, and even in alternative media. Alternative media is Google and Facebook, and sort of the alternative where we head on the internet, is now being powerfully censored by Big Pharma in a variety of ways. They've now gone into partnership, as you probably know, with Google and with Facebook, to not allow anyone to question like vaccinations or pharmaceutical approach to medicine in general. It's become really politically incorrect to question any of these things. The ability to hire thousands and thousands of people who have multiple identities on Facebook and other social media platforms, Instagram and so forth, to scour all the blogs and all the chat rooms and all the social media threads and everything to find anyone who questions any of this and slam them and try to get them deplatformed and so forth, and shame them and criticize them. People are paid. I mean, they're paid money to attack on a massive sort of, it's called astroturfing. It looks like grassroots, but it's just being paid for by these large corporations, primarily the big pharmaceutical industries, and some of the other large industries are especially involved in this. The meat and dairy and egg industries are somewhat involved, but it's really Big Pharma, I think, that, from what I understand, has the most to lose if people go vegan, and have the most to lose if people start questioning the war mentality in health. The idea that our body is being attacked by all these dangerous pathogens, and we have to mobilize our attack. We have to have a war against them, rather than seeing health in a holistic way, that we're in relationship with each other, with the earth, with with our life, and if we're in harmony and, you know, have a healthy biochemistry underlying everything through our nutrition, then we don't need pharmaceuticals. We don't need vaccinations. You know, natural immunity is much more powerful than any kind of vaccinated immunity could ever be, which is basically understood now to be toxic and weakened people's immune system, and you have customers for life. So the whole thing has become quite a battleground, really. And so I think this is, you know, one of the things that people have been asking me, you know, like, what do I think about all this? And, you know, personally, I'm very much someone who, since I was raised in the media, I'm extremely skeptical of narratives that are promoted in the media, because I understand that the media is now so concentrated in the hands of such a tiny number of very powerful and wealthy individuals and groups, that whenever anything is promoted as an important new idea, then I think we have to be suspicious, because what's really happening, we don't know. We don't really know what's happening, actually. We're not told the truth about these things. So that's true a lot. Like this whole thing we've noticed with global climate change, which really, you know, could be an important avenue for the vegan message to begin to percolate into our society, because the destruction of rainforests and animal farming, if there's anything damaging to our ecosystems and causing depletion of water and air, and not really air, but depletion of land and habitat, and causing air pollution and water pollution, it's animal agriculture and species extinction. And global climate change, to me, is also part of this. And I think I'm not a climate scientist, so I can't say for sure what the science on climate change actually is. Being someone who's somewhat skeptical of the media, I'm actually somewhat skeptical of some of the climate narrative, just because it's so strongly promoted by the media that I'm suspicious. And I'm also suspicious that with all these ideas of carbon trading and all these different things that they wanted, that are proposed in order to try to mitigate climate change, that veganism is not discussed. Al Gore has not discussed this, you know, at all, basically, and neither has really the Greta Thunberg. I just saw a video not too long ago of a video interview. Conversation between her and George Monbiot, who's a well-known journalist from England, and it was this passionate sort of exhortation to the people to take climate change seriously and to do something about it. And to me, it was extremely disempowering, because they didn't say one word and didn't have even one image of animal agriculture, the whole thing. It was a video, and they had lots of images of all kinds of things, and they didn't ever recommend anything about eating less animal foods or looking at animal agriculture and the role of it. So it's to me, this is really something that is being used, I think, in some ways to create the next wave of an attempt to dominate human society. Again, I think that's why the animal agriculture is so critical to the whole system, because as long as we're exploiting animals, there's that fundamental piece in place where we're eating animal foods and we don't want to make connections. We tend to shut down our natural capacity to make connections and our natural intelligence, and we become very naive and easily manipulated. And I just still am amazed at how easily manipulated we actually are. And I think it also goes back, another person was asking if I could talk a little bit about the birth process and how that plays a role in this. And And I mentioned this a little bit in the World Peace Diet, but I think, you know, if you do any research into Frederick Laboyer's work, he did a video, a film, and I think he wrote a book also, or did research anyway. It's called Birth Without Violence. And that whole movement back, I remember in the 1960s and 70s, kind of a hippie thing to have a home birth, have a water birth, and sort of take birthing out of the hospitals, out of the cesarean sections. They'll make it a surgical procedure that makes a lot of money for the establishment and kind of deprives women and babies of the natural birthing process. But that's really, I have to say, it's not a good situation. You know, we're born in many ways in our society today in a system that's quite violent towards the little babies and towards the mothers. And I think it's modeled in many ways on animal agriculture, where I own you and I own your baby, and we're going to do it this way, and don't think, and we're going to vaccinate him, and we're going to take him and put him in school, and you don't really have a choice. So this is really difficult, I think, when children are born in a system where the mother isn't really empowered to bond deeply with the baby, and in many cases is disconnected and is in a system of disconnectedness and a system that views the birth as, like I say, as a medical procedure rather than as a spiritual experience and deep bonding experience. And so I think there's deep wounds that happen which are difficult. I mean, most children today, I don't know the percentage, but it's high. I think it's 80 to 90% don't even get regular breast milk from their own mother. You get a bottle or something, or some other alternative. And this is part of the same thing. They're now, when I was a kid, there was five vaccinations. There weren't that many. There were some, but even that was too many. But now we're up to 60 or 70. And the industry isn't liable, and there's never been any studies where these have been shown to be safe. I mean, that's required for regular drugs. You have to show that they're not harmful, but for vaccinations, you don't have to show that they're not harmful. It's just not necessary. So they just do it. They just give them, and these vaccinations have all kinds of toxic. I mean, they're definitely not vegan. I mean, there's all kinds. There's bovine tissue. There's chicken tissue. There's pig tissue. There's human fetal tissue. Recently, some of the human fetal tissue from genetically deformed humans apparently has been being used for years. It's been going into vaccinations and causing all kinds of problems. I mean, the polio vaccination recently was being administered in the Philippines and caused many cases of polio. The polio the UN came right out and said, all these polio cases were caused by the vaccinations. It's well known that vaccinations are shedding viruses and causing the diseases that they're supposed to be protecting against and destroying the natural immunity that people would have. So it just shuts down our natural capacity to be healthy, to have these toxic substances, these tissues from animals, which come from tortured animals going into our veins, plus mercury is still used and other adjuvants that are well known to be toxic. There's all kinds of the whole list on the CDC website. You can just go there and look. I've seen the list of additives and formaldehyde and definitely there's glyphosate. A lot of glyphosate in these vaccinations. And glyphosate is a broad-spectrum antibiotic. I mean, that's going right into our veins and veins of little babies who are just now developing their immune systems. I mean, it's a direct attack on their health and immunity for the rest of their life. and as well as reducing their spiritual connection and their mental clarity. So it's just quite interesting for me to view all that and realize that, you know, it's understandable why it's hard for people to go vegan. You know, when people's natural wisdom and capacities and clarity are so brutally attacked from birth, like we're little calves, you know, that are just stolen from our mothers and forced to undergo these various harmful things by well-meaning people. You know, I mean, the doctors and nurses are well-meaning, just like our parents are well-meaning when they feed us foods that are really pretty toxic also, animal foods, concentrate toxins. I mean, that's well understood. So we have these toxins coming in the food and in the medications, and it's hard to escape it now. I mean, they're taking, California just, you know, passed a law, one of the worst laws, to not allowing even doctors to make medical exemptions. I mean, this is a form of fascism for sure, of the worst kind, and bodily integrity and informed consent are really foundational principles. But without informed consent, if you take that away, it's unconstitutional, I believe. So we'll have to see what happens in the big picture. I think it's important for us to just be aware of what we're up against in terms of not only the institutions in our society and the agenda of the pharmaceutical industry, which I think is not only to make a lot of money, but to reduce intelligence so that it's hard for anyone to stop them. And I've been reading this book recommended by our friends in Canada who are Wolpe's Diet facilitators, and John and Christine, and it's by John Taylor Gatto. It's The Underground History of American Education. And, you know, when you think about it, I mean, after being born into this medical system, which is so harsh, and I'm so glad, like, my sister and my niece have been able to do, for the most part, home births, but even there, it's getting more and more difficult for them to escape the doctors. But anyway, after that, then there's school. And this book is really fascinating in discussing how our educational system, it really reminds me in many ways of animal agriculture. You know, one of the main ideas in World Peace Diet is, as we sow, so shall we reap. And I mean, if we're exploiting animals and hyper-confining them in cages and reducing their health and reducing their intelligence, I mean, we create the same systems. In a way, we're herded the same way they are herded. We're herded, and kids are herded into these systems where they're exposed to a system that really shuts down their intelligence. I mean, really reduces their intelligence. And the book, I recommend it. I mean, he really goes into the history of the early schools in the United States and in Europe, in England, and how the inspiration, I mean, just as one example, the caste system in India, which is very, you know, kind of hardwired. It's hard to get up, break it. When we were in India, I could kind of see it in operation. But they have an educational system that developed in India back in the British colonial period. It was enforced, especially where the lower castes all went to school, and the schooling was done in a way to teach them two things, you know, what they needed to know to do the jobs that they were supposed to do, and number two, to be docile, to absolutely accept their place in society, that this is their place, and don't ever think that they would have any other place. It was a whole curriculum, you know, oriented around that, which the British, several British educators immersed themselves in that, learned from that, went back to England and duplicated that, basically, through the church system, the Anglican Church, and other wealthy people that started the school system, the mandatory school systems in England back in the 1800s. And it was based on the caste system in India, where, you know, the aristocracy go to their own schools where they are taught to rule, and everybody else goes to these other schools where the basic underlying teaching is that you're going to learn what you need to learn to work in a factory and to stay at your level, and don't think you're going to ever go to any other level, and that the similar systems were also implemented in other European countries and also in this country. And what I thought was really interesting, I was just reading the other day, I think yesterday, I don't have it right in front of me, but the literacy rate in the United States is pretty abysmal. So many people go through our educational system and can't really read effectively. It was something like only, 10% of the population is buying like 90% of the books. That, something like 60% of the people graduating from high school, after they graduate from high school, they don't read any more books after that. They're done. People don't read. People can't read. I mean, a lot of people really have a hard time even doing basic, filling out employment application forms and things like that. And it's so interesting that, back in the 1700s, virtually the entire colonies at the time were literate. People could read. And the people, when Adam Smith wrote, his book and other books that were named people, everybody read them. And they talked about them, and there was people were much more literate, and they were reading really difficult material. They were reading Shakespeare and John Donne and the Bible and lots of other things that were pretty not that easy to read. Works of literature, the great works of literature. That's what people were reading, and so I think this intentional dumbing down and harming of our population is one of the things that makes it more difficult for us to get people to go vegan. I mean, for the whole vegan movement to grow, we need basically to have people who have capacities, that have capacities to make connections, to think critically, to look deeply, to read, to converse, to see beyond just the surface of what the authorities are telling us and not just believe it, and also have the capacity to question a narrative that they've internalized. That's the thing. And I think our educational system and our medical system and our religious systems and our governmental systems, they're all really engineered at this point over the years to reduce that capacity in us. So that's why I think going vegan is such an enormously liberating action for us to take, because it shows that we're questioning the official narrative. I mean, you have to, and that's not easy. But also, it shows that we're able to see like a positive alternative to what's happening. It shows that not just our rational capacities are awakened, but our feelings, our empathy, our compassion, our caring is awakened. And that is so precious. It's so important, because what we are is spiritual beings. What we are essentially is eternal consciousness manifesting on this earth for a while. And we're so easily reduced, unfortunately, and understanding that, because we're born into a system that's based on materialism and seeing beings as objects to be used. So I think it's helpful, I don't want to burst everybody's bubble here, but, for example, I think somebody asked me if I would say something about Greta Thunberg, and I hate to go into this too much because it's very disillusioning, but, basically, I think, unfortunately, that she's been being used in many ways by very wealthy, powerful interests that are using her to deepen their domination of our society. And I think as vegans, we have to just be careful not to buy into something too quickly. We have to kind of look what's really driving things, because when the narrative is pushed, the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and the and NPR and CNN and all these mainstream that are just run by the CIA, basically the super powerful corporations and financial institutions in the background, we have to wonder exactly why they're pushing it. And I think I did some research. I'm not sure if I put it in the resources. It is kind of questioning. Yeah, there is. Yeah, you can look at the link. The Manufacturing of Greta Thunberg is one article. It's a series of articles written by someone named Corey. I can't remember his last name. He's from Canada. He's a journalist, but talks about basically how it's a little suspicious how this European group, We Don't Have Time, started out sort of marketing this particular narrative that of climate, global warming, climate change, and how they get so much money, so much money. That's the thing, and how the European Union, the head of the European Union, for example, this is an example. There's so much money in this, and that's what makes it suspicious, because Greta Thunberg gave a lecture to them, or talk, kind of a little talk to the, and the head of the European Union, who's very powerful guy. He thanked her and he said, because of you, we're going to try to do something about this. And a year before that, they had already put into place a whole series of initiatives that were going to be basically guaranteeing hundreds of billions of dollars of development funds that are going to go straight into these huge organizations and corporations like Goldman Sachs and the big banks, and they're getting the funds to basically transfer the economic foundation from petroleum. See, the whole idea is petroleum is bad, right? Petroleum is terrible, so we need to kind of scare everybody away from that into something else, something green. But they don't like people to do what we're doing. Like, we have solar panels on the roof, we have battery. Recently PG&E did a massive blackout in Northern California. I think 800,000 people were without power for several days. And very few people had the system we have, the battery, because it's not encouraged and are independent. So there's this whole push to create an alternative energy structure foundation that's not petroleum based. It'll be more solar, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure. Nuclear maybe, and wind maybe, and hydro, and who knows? Maybe a fusion. But basically, to keep it centralized and to keep everybody paying and getting used to the fact that there's not enough energy, and you've got to get it from one or two people, from the big energy companies and the bankers, basically, who own them. There's just a few huge investment funds, essentially, like BlackRock, that basically make the decisions and own, essentially, most of the entire world's economy. So it's concentrated in a few hands, and they control the media. So we have to be very careful in just blindly promoting something. And I think the most important thing is, again, is grassroots self-sufficiency in food and communication and energy and so forth, and do the best we can. I mean, I love that our friend, she's on the call, Lily. Having your own solar panels and your own battery, house batteries, and creating communities of sustainability and liberation, I think, is really the way forward in educating people about these things. So I think, we humans have enormous capacities to be resilient, and the fact that even with the heavy-handed repression of the media and the medical repression and food and all the glyphosate, which is now understood, and fluoridation is a whole other thing. I mean, there's now been mainstream research has been done And reported in the mainstream media how fluoridation, and 80% of the water in the United States is fluoridated. We're one of the only countries in the world that really allows the mass fluoridation of our water, and the government is pushing for 100%. You know, they want to expand it to get everybody's water fluoridated. And these studies show that it reduces IQ. I mean, fluoride directly attacks the central nervous system and reduces intelligence. So, you know, we have so many different dimensions of this attack. But anyway, I think it shows the resilience that we have, that we're still able to do as well as we're doing in the face of this massive and heavy-handed attack on our intelligence. And so it's vitally important, I think, that we continue to just talk about what's really happening here and question the official stories. You know, question the official stories. I mean, all these official stories, you know, I can go off onto some tangents here, but I won't. I mean, well, maybe, no, I won't. I'll stop here. But I think it's just wonderful to realize. I mean, we're only here on this planet for a few decades. We see that we came to a planet where there's been this animal agriculture for 10,000 years. Animals have been horribly exploited, and they're continuing to be exploited. And people also, in a system that concentrates wealth in the hands of a few, and it's really the metaphor of animal agriculture, the template of a system of imprisonment from birth, from the moment you're born, from conception. You know, you're imprisoned. Animals are imprisoned, and they're born into a system to be exploited and used. And that we are realizing this is, we've been in many ways born into a similar system. I mean, it's wonderful we have the freedoms that we have, you know, in the United States and in other, more industrialized nations and so forth. We do enjoy certain freedoms, and that's fantastic. And to continue to defend those and to really extend them, you know, to other beings, to animals and to people who don't understand the situation. And, you know, we were just this, like last week speaking at a Unitarian church on Sunday morning. And, you know, the Unitarians are a great example, I think, because there's this whole underlying idea in Unitarianism to be a free thinker. You know, the Unitarians are the free thinkers. They like to be free to think whatever they want, and justice, and leading edge, progressive, and yet, I think, gosh, you know, most of these people have no idea the consequences of their actions with food. Are we really questioning the media, the domination of our narratives by just a few people and a few corporations that decide really what's going to be in the news? And the conversation, because that's really the key. What kind of conversations are we having? And so I think the most important thing is to realize that each one of us is like Thoreau said, each one of us is a force who can transform our world. Thoreau said, "I've never met someone who is quite awake. If I had, I would never be able to look him in the face." You know, each one of us can awaken. And like Thoreau also said, he said, if, you know, one person who is awake can stop the entire machine. And I think it's true. We you know, each one of us, as we awaken, we can send forth with every gesture, every thought, and every word, an energy of healing and awakening. And then we'll have inspiration. We'll have thoughts and ideas of what we can do, how we can do it, how we can live, how we can share ideas with other people. And that's what we'll be talking about, some of these things, this weekend, because I think, an intensive immersion is fantastic. You know, we can immerse ourselves into an environment of healing and awakening. And if we can do it for a few days, it gathers momentum. And when we go back into the world, the so-called world that we left before we went in, shifts have been made. You know, our energy is, and our thoughts and our feelings and our awareness has been broadened and deepened, and we can bring that together. Plus, we make relationships. And I think that's one of the most important things in the work we're doing, is to find like-minded people and to cultivate relationships with like-minded people, because we are in such a small minority and like a little plant that's growing up in a forest where there's lots of animals trampling everything. You need to put a little fence around it, or these poor little plants are going to get destroyed. And I think it's important for us ourselves to have communities where we have protection. And that was, to me, like what the farm was, and also what Sung Wong Sa Zen Monastery was, and other meditation centers I've lived in over the years have been like little protective communities where we can get strong and grow big enough that when you can take the wall away and we're strong enough now, no animal can trample us anymore. And we are able to deliver a healing message, which is why I think our Wiltish Diet circle is so helpful, because we're all basically on the same family in the sense of we have the same values and we have the same tribe in a sense, or the same consciousness of being here to help awaken our relationship with animals and with ecosystems to a higher level based on respect. And this, not just doing it, you know, with organic chicken or grass-fed dairy or something like that, but to actually get to the root of it and be a force for healing at a deeper level. So this is what we're seeing happening, and I think creating these kinds of liberated spaces, more and more of them, and multiplying them in thousands of ways. And the internet is still a good way, but I think face-to-face is really important. I was also going to, so I just want to reiterate, if you have a question or want to make a comment, you know, press star 6. We are now at about 5 minutes past the hour, so we have another maybe 20 minutes. Usually we go that long. I mean, we can go however long we want. But I did want to mention the point that Michael Clapper made, because I think it's important. And the point was that he was talking to Kim Williams, who is a pretty well-known doctor. Kim Williams, MD, he's the president of the American, whatever it is, College of Cardiology, or the Cardiology Association in the United States. And he's also the head of the cardiology unit at one of the big hospitals in Chicago. So he's a very highly esteemed, highly respected doctor in his profession, but he's also gone plant-based. And he has been able, over the last few years, really changed his approach to people that come into the hospital who have high blood pressure and have cardiac problems. Instead of putting them on medications and instead of doing heart bypass surgeries and so forth, he's doing nutritional counseling. A lot of it sort of inspired by Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. Neil Bernard and Dr. T. Colin Campbell and Dr. Garth Davis, and a lot of other people are all kind of moving in the same direction making these connections and doing education. And so over the past few years in his unit, the cardiology unit at the hospital, he's also been able to get the other MDs who are under him, many of them, to switch the way they're doing medicine as well. And so he was called in, and Michael Clapper talks about the story, how he met Dr. Kim Williams at a gathering, and he looked a little bit glum, and he said, "What's you doing okay?" And he said, "Well, I'm doing okay, but I'm really upset about something." And so they talked, and basically he told them how he had been called in by the administration of this big hospital in Chicago, and basically was told that, you've got to change something, because the cardiology unit used to be the number one the number one center for income for the hospital, and now it had become the lowest center of income for the hospital, because he was no longer doing procedures and giving out pharmaceutical drugs. He was now educating people about nutrition, which just doesn't bring in money. And so we have this whole system that's set up with a substrate basically financed by the big banks, that you need a reliable flood of sick people that you can give procedures and drugs to, which are very expensive, to keep the money rolling back into those coffers and to expand it, to have more cancer centers and more procedures and more high-tech operations and pharmaceutical resources and so forth that you can make money on. and try to get, you know, virtually 100% of the population on some kind of medication for diabetes or heart disease or cancer or autoimmune disease or some kind of, you know, depression or anxiety, I mean, they're pretty close. I mean, from what I understand, not many people are, you know, the age of Madeline and me taking no medications of any kind. It's kind of, it's pretty rare nowadays. Whereas just 20 or 30 years ago, it wasn't that rare. So there's been they've made huge progress, and part of it is the control of the media and also the control of the medical establishment, which in control of the medical education, you know, when you control the education of the doctors, so they're taught not to, you know, nothing about nutrition and just taught to play this particular game that they're playing. But the silver lining on the whole thing was a conversation that Dr. Clapper had later, I guess at some other kind of gathering conference, where he was talking to someone pretty high up in the insurance business. And you know, insurance in a sense is bigger than the medical industry since they're paying for everything. And he was saying how the insurance industry is getting very excited actually about the possibilities of people shifting to a plant-based way of eating because they could really increase their profits and reduce their costs and if people were healthier, basically. And so now there's this tension, I guess, between the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical medical complex, and how this is all going to go. And then, of course, you've got the animal industries involved. You've got the big petroleum industries. And then you've got the consumers and the citizens. Hopefully more citizens are pushing to have more safeguards of our environment and to get more truth and labeling and to allow us not to be vaccinated or to be drugged against our will, and you know, all these things. These are things, these are legal things, but also as consumers, not to buy these products and to help support alternatives. And so we see massive changes actually happening in spite of the heavy-handed attempts by industries not to let this happen. So I think the beautiful thing is that this is a revolution, I would say, or an evolution that is leaderless. You know, there's no one that they can just get rid of that will stop this. We've reached the tipping point now, and there's so many people that are moving this forward in 1,000 different ways, and this is it. So it's happening, and I think personally the way forward is to be healthy ourselves. And it's really essential to have a healthy biochemistry, right? That the fundamental biochemical foundation of our body is not full of toxic chemicals. And that's one of the reasons why glyphosate residues have become such a huge issue, because now that glyphosate has been just by the millions of tons is just spewed not only in animal agriculture, but even by people trying to kill the weeds in their yard and the highway departments along the road and everything. So now, and then they're using glyphosate on virtually all the beans, not only just the GMO crops, but on vegetables and fruits and grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, everything. They use glyphosate. And it's a broad spectrum antibiotic. So it's really harmful to the microbiome, which is essential to our health. And not just our physical health, but our psychological health, because it's now understood that the community that lives inside of us is really responsible in many ways and directly connected to our moods. And depression and anxiety and so forth really come from, in many ways, people who are eating animal foods that have a kind of a toxic microbiome, or people who are eating a plant-based diet but eating glyphosate and are having a lot of problems, and leaky gut and other problems come from glyphosate. So it's really important not to buy food that is not organic, not only because these foods are killing bees. I mean, bees are really dying at a rapid rate, not honeybees so much. I mean, honeybees are, but the wild bees, which are responsible for pollinating, we're losing now like 90% of bees are at risk of extinction at this point. Wild bees is over 4,000 different species, and most of them are at risk of extinction because of glyphosate and the neonicotinoid pesticides and loss of habitat and animal agriculture, basically, as well as butterflies, birds and fish, and ecosystems in general. are on such an attack. So organic. I can say it enough. And also, the, as Madeline was saying, the cleaning products and the personal care products and everything, we see it still so much when we travel and stay in people's houses that so many longtime vegans are still actually promoting, unfortunately, the spread of toxins. So it's not in any way to, I know it can be daunting, but not to criticize anyone, but just to realize that our choices really make a difference. And to start our day as best we can, you know, with a foundation of health, you know, a mental health, spiritual health. Take time in the morning, again, like I always emphasize, to meditate and just be quiet and get outside and get some fresh air and celebrate the fact that we have another day to live and grow and learn and contribute, and to create a healthy routine in the morning. I think this is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves and for others. You know, there's certain practices I noticed when I was in monasteries and in other spiritual communities, that the whole idea of starting off the day with reinforcing certain truths. So, for example, in my own life, I always say the 10 precepts every morning, not to harm others, you know, the whole 10 precepts. It's in our book, not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to cause sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, and to force drugs onto others. I mean, this whole thing with the vaccination, we're just breaking the fifth precept. And then to be the second five precepts, to praise myself or to condemn others, but to be understanding and sympathetic. And, you know, this is so important, I think, too, in our movement to overcome our own shortcomings and not to become angry, but to exercise loving kindness and compassion, and to be generous, not to withhold any kind of spiritual or material aid to those who need it, and then the final one is to respect the three treasures in the Buddhist tradition: the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, which basically just represent our inner awareness, the integrity of our own mind, the teachings that help us to awaken and that also come through us to help others, and then the Sangha, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The Sangha is the community of like-minded people, and like right now, we're a Sangha. We're a spiritual community, a family in a sense, on a deeper level. Perhaps before we were born, we were making an agreement that we would do the best we can during this lifetime, even if we get separated and we forget our mission, that we will remember our mission and we'll help each other to remember our mission here for this lifetime, and to be loyal to our calling and to be loyal to our purpose, to remember that we have a purpose for this life. So to really honor the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I think it kind of sums everything up. You know, to honor the enlightened nature that is our true nature, that shines in every being, that shines in every bird and fish and animal, that radiates through them into the harmony of the ecosystems that are all around us. We have no idea what it is like to look through the eyes of owls or of fishes or of other of all the animals we see celebrating their lives around us, and their life is valuable to them. It's as valuable to them as, you know, our life is to us. And so this Buddha nature, the enlightened awareness, is shining in all beings, and the way that we can honor it is to awaken to it in ourselves, which means fundamentally to question the narrative, I always say that, the stories that we are telling ourselves, and most of them are stories that we did not make up ourselves. They were imposed upon us by our society, that we need to project such and such an image to be successful, to get what we want. I love what Emerson said about success. You know, he said success has nothing to do with fame and power and wealth and everything that the world says. Success has to do with helping even one other person. If we help one other person, then we have not lived in vain. If we can be of assistance, be kind and caring and respectful and lend a helping hand to one other being, then our life is worthwhile and we have had meaning. And if we can awaken to the, and glimpse the beauty and magnificence of the true nature of consciousness that is eternal, that is the essence of what we are, and see that in others, then, you know, we, this is it. I mean, everything else is, in a sense, frosting on the cake. If we can do that and then also write books or give classes or have conversations or, you know, anything we can do to help share this and deepen it. This is the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the teachings. It's not Buddhistic. I mean, it is Buddhistic, but it's really, it's a universal teaching. Yeah, I think at the core of all the world religions, there's this basic understanding of respect for the transpersonal dimension of awareness, which is our true nature, which we're disconnected from in our society so that we can be exploited and to see ourselves merely as consumers. And there's no greater way to do that than to put people in a system where they're consuming animals. I mean, that really, that's it. And so fortunately, people are going vegan. But the most important thing, I think, when we go vegan is to understand why. And as we understand deeper, that's why the World Peace Diet was written. It was written to help us understand why on a deeper level. And I think there's no limit to the depths we can attain when we question who we are and what we are at a deeper and deeper and deeper level. Until we can keep unfolding, I think there's no end to it. And there's no end to the capacity that we have to manifest vegan living, which is kindness and joy and love and abundance as an expression of life in this lifetime. If we express veganism at a very deep level, I think, one person could make many people go vegan without even trying, because it'll be just radiating out of our being. And I think that's why it's so important to have a morning program where we connect with the beauty of our being, of our physical being, of our mental being, of our spiritual being, of our earth being, of our cosmic being, really, and then do the work for the day that is called for us to do, realizing that we're, in a sense, all born into a system that forces us to somehow, most of us anyway, to do something for money, to you know, do something in order to continue to be viable in our society. It takes really a lot of effort. So to have compassion for everyone, especially for other vegans, that we've all been in many ways wounded by the system we've been raised in. We're all in the process of healing, and not to praise myself nor to condemn others, but to overcome my own shortcomings, to quote the sixth precept, and to be understanding and sympathetic. These, I think, are the beautiful opportunities that we have. So that's, I think, basically what I wanted to share today. I hope that we can, really question deeply everything we're told in our society about what's happening, about what has happened, about our history. You know, the idea that we have a history where people in the old days were stupid and now we're smart. I question that. You know, I think perhaps before the herding culture took over, we had free people living amazing, magnificent lives. And once we started herding animals and we created a system of enslavement, and now we had to change the history and tell people, oh, yeah, it was really a dark time before, you know, back a long time ago. And I didn't know people were so literate until I, read the research that was done in this book. So I think it's the same thing, to realize that we have a glorious history, really, and if you go back far enough where we were in harmony with animals and nature, and it's time to regain that again. It's time to evolve or or to recapture, to resurrect the power and the beauty of our true nature and the way we can live together on this earth. All right, so it looks like there's one person has raised their hand here, so I'm going to go ahead and take this question, and I apologize if the system in any way isn't working the way it should. I'm really not sure. This new system is a little bit difficult for me to navigate, but I'm doing my best here. So let's see here. How do I do this? So Cocoa Beach, Florida. Let's see.
Hey.
Here we go. Okay. Sorry. Okay. There we go. Sorry, I'm learning. Yes. Who's this?
It's Davi.
Hi. Nice to hear your voice.
It's very quiet. I'm in London. It's like 2:30 in the morning, so I can't really speak loud. Cause...
You're not in Cocoa Beach. You're in London.
No,
all right, well, just
no.
Be quietly. Don't wake anybody up with any vegan rant.
Well, it's interesting. I was speaking with a friend earlier about so many of the things that you've touched on tonight, including the glyphosate thing, and I was really ranting earlier about how glyphosate is in all the water now, because it is. It's water soluble, and the rain is picking it up, dropping it everywhere. So it's difficult to get around it, and, you know, you can't really expect the government to ban it because they're making so much money. So this is a big topic of discussion earlier, and then you started talking about all of the things that we were discussing, including the Greta Thunberg thing. And at this point, we're toward the end of it, and I'm not really in a ranting mood. I'm in a sort of piecing out mood. I'm like, well, it's already been mentioned, and I just wanted to say hi and thank you.
Oh, well, thanks so much for touching in and letting me know for your peaceful space. I really appreciate it. And we're just about to the point where we should probably wrap up the call.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks so much for touching in, Kavi. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Yeah. Likewise.
Take care.
Thank you for doing
this. Right.
Be well.
You're welcome. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, you know, I just saw that I'm so sorry because it looks like I have this, I mean, I got an email, I sent an email to Dr. Silas Rao, asking him to please, call in. And he didn't realize it. He sent an email, because I'm talking here, that he's on the call. But I'm not seeing him on the call. I mean, I have this list of names of everybody, but it says there's 17. Let's see, there, but I can't, I can't see, I'm not sure what's happening. Why I don't see, that's really unfortunate because maybe I'm not getting the whole list. I don't know what else to do here. Let's see here. Oh my gosh. Now I see another list. I'm looking. I apologize everybody, but I've got to call them, I guess, and find out why I'm not seeing everybody on the list, because it's really I still don't see Dr. Silas Rao. Well, all right. Well, why don't we, I think maybe he was here and I didn't realize it because of the way we have this new system, and I have to do something about this. So I apologize. I guess Dr. Rao was with us. I want to encourage everybody to find out more about Dr. Silas Rao's conference call that's coming up. The conference is coming up, and also the conference, the summit calls that he had recently. And I won't take time right now to look it up, but I think it was, it looks like it's great work that he's doing. And I just realized that there's all these other people. I pushed a button and I could see a bunch of other names. I didn't realize we're on the call with us here. So Thank you all so much for joining us here. And I'll just quickly say here, please look at the resources for October 2019. We have our Healing Our World upcoming World Peace Diet retreat in Marin this weekend. The link also to my interview with Dr. Sailesh Rao. Also a link to my lecture. You might enjoy this. Healing, Thriving on the Journey, Lessons from 39 Glorious Vegan Years. This is a kind of a unique lecture that I gave a few months ago, showing the whole, actually Madeline and I, how our life together and going all around and all these different things. So it's more, much more personal kind of a lecture. Also, a link to this very important conference. It's one of the biggest, probably maybe the biggest vegan conference in the country or in the world. It's called the Real Truth About Health Conference. They've been having it every year for the last few years, and I've been invited to speak at that conference in January. I think it's January 25th or something like that. It's in Long Island, as I said. So you can find out more at that link. And I'll be there for that. There's also a great tour, video link to Madeline's tour of the food forest, of our food forest. If you want to see our garden, it's really coming along. And also this must-watch documentary, The Shame of Point Reyes. It's a short documentary, but Point Reyes, as you know, is a national seashore. It's near where we're going to be having our retreat in West Marin. And the dairy industry has taken over. I mean, it's really such a travesty of justice. And the few remaining elk now I think are going to be killed because there's 5,000 cows, only four, and each cow eats about 50 pounds of food a day. And there's only like 600 elk. Each one only eats about 10 pounds of food a day. And the dairy farmers want to get rid of the elk because they say they're interfering with the cows. And and Point Reyes is now on the list of the top 10 most polluted water in the entire state of California. And this is a national seashore, right? It's so polluted by the dairy industry. It's so destroyed by the dairy industry, this beautiful national seashore. And Congressman Jared Huffman, who's our congressman in Sonoma County, where we have our address, just got Congress to pass a law, a special law, allowing the dairy to operate in the national seashore because they're not supposed to be even allowed in. So it's just a terrible corruption going on there. But it's a great video, I mean, really important video. And also this great documentary I highly recommend also. It's called The Food Cure, about the Gerson approach to healing cancer through a plant-based diet. They're in Tijuana, or just in Mexico. They were not allowed you're not allowed to treat cancer through diet in the United States. So they actually had to go to Mexico to do it. But tremendous to see the fantastic healings that are happening that they've been able to do. Wonderful. The Economist magazine, you know, mainstream, what would happen if everyone went vegan? A great article on the many benefits. You know, this is in sort of mainstream. So it's good to see some of the people beginning to connect the dots here. PCRM has petitioned the FDA to put cancer warnings on cheese. There's a lot of other news here. And the Game Changers. I really hope everyone watches this documentary film, The Game Changers. We didn't see it we weren't able to get to it actually in Michigan when we were there September 16th, but we were able to see it when we were in Mount Shasta on a TV, a large big screen TV, and we downloaded it from iTunes. So you can see it on Netflix, you can see it on iTunes, and it was the number one, it set the record for the most successful documentary in the history of iTunes right now. So it's really being seen by a lot of people, and it's a great video on promoting vegan living for all the reasons, really, for environmental reasons, for health reasons, strength reasons, and even animal is in there somewhat. So it's a really great video. And quite a few other wonderful good news and some other things that I think it's good to be aware of. So I will be speaking at the San Francisco Vegetarian Veg Fest. The San Francisco Veg Fest is not this weekend, the following weekend. It's one day on Saturday. I think it's the 26th, is it, of October. And so join us in San Francisco if you're in the Bay Area for that. And much love to you all. I think it's really time for me to stop now. And we've kind of pretty much over our time a little bit, but it's been wonderful. And I really apologize to Dr. Sailesh Rao. I couldn't, unfortunately, keep track of all the different things here with this new system to see that he was on the call. But we'll get him back here hopefully next month in November, and we will be able to hear his wisdom and also hear what they decided to do at the conference. So that might be great too. So, all right, everyone. Much love to you all. Thank you, Madeline. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. And till next time, so in November, to kind of reiterate here, in 1 month, the third Thursday of November will be the 21st of November. And join us, please, then. On the 28th, which is a week later, is Thanksgiving Day, and on that day we are flying to Bali to begin a month-long lecture tour to Bali and to Jakarta, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and Penang, Bangkok, Chiang Mai, and then to Taiwan. We'll be back basically the day after Christmas. So keep us in your prayers, please, for the retreat tomorrow and this weekend. We're with you in spirit, and thanks everyone so much for all your efforts. I'm always happy to answer any questions as best I can to respond from the limited amount of understanding I have about things, and hopefully together we can each contribute our piece to the puzzle and create a beautiful possibility, anyway, for a world of peace and freedom and justice for everyone. So I will just close now with a piece of music. Let's close with this piece, one of our good old favorites, the Duck Song, featuring these magnificent animals, the ducks, and it's about a 4-minute piece of music. So much love to you all. Thanks again for joining us. Until next time. Okay, thanks.